The ghosts were there,
but no one was there.
Yeah, I brought my X-Men agenda to show them that this was they have an open meeting.
And they said, ha ha, we have an open meeting, but you don't know where.
Right.
You know, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless used to do this. They would have meetings in 1988 when we were kind of having these big mass meetings asking them to support ending the sleeping ban. And they agreed to that. They supported ending the entire camping ban. Then we started a camp out on a property which they didn't own at the time. They were negotiating to buy. It was owned by, I think, the River Street Shelter at that time out of the back 40. And the we asked them to support the tent city that was out there. And they... What Paige Smith and Paul Lee did was they postponed it at the next meeting, and then they started hiding their meetings. They would move from house to house, not telling us where the meetings were. And for 6 months, they didn't hold a public meeting. And that was their way of avoiding this issue. So I don't know, maybe what the advisory committee is doing is avoiding contact with the public.
Well, didn't they eventually start holding the meetings in some judges' chambers just to keep people away?
Eventually, Karen Gillette and the Homeless Resource Center, which was actually then called the Homeless Community Services Center, HCRC was what it was, Homeless Community Resource Center, they began holding meetings in judges' chambers in order to keep out both activists and clients. I was able to get into one of their meetings once. You had to get Karen Gillette's explicit permission. We made a presentation, five of us, against the sleeping ban, and they kind of nodded and then did nothing about it. So it was, I think that's a favored tactic. What people who don't want public input do is they hold meetings in inaccessible places. But here it sounds like they're violating the law. And if they're violating the law, then there should be some way of holding them to account. Wouldn't you think?
Well, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, if they cancel their meeting, maybe they decided they better check it out before they actually hold a meeting in secret and then get sued. Get sued really early in the process. Well, Phil's already suing.
I think they've already held at least one secret meeting or one closed meeting, let's say. And the meeting they held on, still there? On April 6th, there was a meeting in the community trailer, which was, I don't know if it was a joint meeting, but it certainly involved the advisory committee, and they held one meeting once. So, I think the reality of it is, though,
Well, didn't they hold one meeting in the trailer where they had the actual Sisters of Mercy there?
That I don't know. I know that we might be able to get a report on that from Becky Johnson, who interviewed the video, the April 6th meeting, and April 17th meeting was audioed by Nena Ruiz, who's the organizer for the tenants at the Lee Apartments. But again, if people are interested out there, and they may have a little trouble following all this, since it's kind of, arcane to people who just tuned in, we're talking about the city's essentially gutting the housing of hundreds of poor Hispanics in the beach flats. In order to do so, they're holding closed meetings in secret places. They're holding meetings where they're not allowing public input. At this last meeting 3 days ago, they cut back public input big time, you may remember.
Right.
With different kinds of restrictions. And it's just a process that needs to be opened up by the kind of action that you and Bernard are doing. And I commend you for it, Scott.
Well, thanks, Robert.
Sure. And I guess the redevelopment, tomorrow there's a meeting at 7 o'clock. It's at 124 LeBrant for supporters of the Dolphin and Lee tenants. And for those who really want real affordable housing and not some project that is really a reduction of affordable housing, it sounds like it has some other purpose, and I'm not quite sure what that purpose is. It's unclear to me, but it's not certainly not giving them, the people who are currently in affordable housing, better affordable housing in any guaranteed way. At 7 o'clock at 124 LeBrant Street, and then I guess on Tuesday night at 5 o'clock, the redevelopment agency will presumably meet again at City Council, when this issue will again be something that people can talk about in a public way to council members who need to get...
Unless they have their microphones turned off.
That's true. They always have the power to turn off your microphone, call the police, get you hauled out of the chambers, as Mayor Sugar has shown that he's not beyond doing.
Well, he's done it to you more often in redevelopment session than anything else. He did it to Ed Davison during a redevelopment session one day, too.
You know, I was about to actually play a little tape from that session of Ed, and I'm not sure it's the same session, but the last redevelopment agency meeting, which, by the way, to most people, redevelopment agency is the city council meeting on these issues of affordable housing, and I guess in a special committee developed after the earthquake, right, at the redevelopment agency?
Well, actually, the history of the redevelopment agency in Santa Cruz is that they first formed the redevelopment agency after the flood in 1955. to have some agency to deal with the Army Corps of Engineers when they built the levees in the late 50s.
Why couldn't the city council just do that as a city council? What was the reason they...
Because there's more state and federal money available to a relocation, to a redevelopment agency.
I see.
And so it's just another way, it's just a bureaucratic bookkeeping.
Well, maybe that's the reason we have this project, the Dolphin Lee demolition, is because it's a fund catcher. It catches federal and state funding.
Right, yeah, that's part of it. But, yeah. I mean, why do we have to eliminate housing that's able to be rehabilitated? Why not rehabilitate the housing or at least do a study to find out if it's capable of being rehabilitated?
And, of course, that's one of the questions we had ready to pose to the Mercy Charities Housing Advisory people to say, look, did you know that no study has been done that shows that refurbishing is not possible or would be a worse alternative than raising this? I know when I talked to Gordon Pusser a couple of days ago, and Gordon is very concerned about what's going to happen to these people, he pointed out to me that the costs of buying the Dolphin and the Lee properties is going up daily. The property is becoming more and more expensive in terms of the estimated cost. He's seen the latest estimates of the Mercy Charities housing estimates, how much it would cost to buy.
Right.
I think it's up to $1.7 million now. And the reason it's expensive, part of the expense is you're going to buy property that already has housing on it. That's more expensive, let's say, than buying Canfield's empty land of the where he's already raised the houses himself. That's to say he's bulldozed them in order to hopefully get it rezoned commercially, but he hasn't been able to do that. So it would be cheaper to buy vacant land. It would also be cheaper because you wouldn't have to pay the cost of destroying the existing housing.
Then you eliminate the relocation cost.
And you would also not have to have people go live somewhere else while you're doing the building because they could stay where they are. I mean,
sense. Then when they move into the new units, you rehabilitate the thing they just left, and all of a sudden you've got 48 new units.
Exactly.
Instead of you're losing...
Well, maybe we don't want those Hispanics around here. Have you ever thought of that one, maybe?
Well, that was one of the issues I raised at this, because there is going to be fewer number of units, which families there aren't going to get back in?
And they're also going to be less affordable and less accessible, not just affordable, but less accessible, and that's really the key, because there'll be all kinds of restrictions on returning, and that...
Oh, yeah, there'll be restrictions on returning... The rents for many people will be higher because they're not going to let people double up like they currently do, which happens all over town. College students do it. All sorts of people do that.
But when Hispanic people do it, it's squalor. Keep that in mind.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the part of the double standard. It's okay if students have too many people in a house, but if Hispanics have too many people in a house, then all of a sudden it's blight. We have to get rid of it. And... See, that's part of the problem is that when you start breaking up these families, you're going to actually end up needing many more than 48 units to house everybody. So there's going to be even if everyone was qualified to move back in, they wouldn't have built enough housing for them all to move back in. If they really want to get rid of overcrowding, which they say is their main objective here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's beyond me. Maybe there's maybe Cecil Cirillo, the redevelopment agency queen, has some higher purpose here that we don't understand.
Well, I think somewhere along the line, Andy Schifrin and Don Lane knows what the real purpose of this whole thing.
Could Catherine Byers be the spider at the center of this web?
Well, she's the one that's pulling the string. I mean, she's the one that pulled the first string there when she...
Wow. Well, maybe we should give Catherine a call. I'll ask my producer to call Catherine on the phone and see if we can get her to talk on public radio, because maybe she can throw some light into this strange, dark corner. I mean...
Yeah, if you can't get her, try Tim.
Uncle Tim Fitzmaurice. He hasn't had anything intelligible or comprehensible to say on this issue recently.
Well, and plus he hasn't been able to find housing for Mary Curry. I mean, what's up? If you can't find housing for one old lady that has multiple problems... How is he going to find housing for 200 Hispanic people that have many multiple problems?
Well, the answer is clear. He's hired Mickey and Mucky from L.A.
Well, let's have Mickey and Mucky from L.A. find Mary Curry a house then.
I refer, of course, to what is it? Mickey and... That's not quite the right name. It is M&M something. Then L.A. There is L.A.
M&M Relocators Service.
They are relocators. They relocate unnecessary Hispanic... families and put them into areas in other parts of the city. The claim is that this group from LA is going to find a home for everybody, whether they have documents or not, whoever they are, whatever their problems are, they'll find them a place to go. And yet, as you point out, Tim cannot find a place for one elderly woman who, you heard her earlier on this show talking, and you probably didn't because you were looking for this meeting, but she was, you know, she talked about trying to get help from Tim Fitzmaurice, and Tim Fitzmaurice went into a panic and asked why she was showing up at his house.
Right, I heard she was going to start camping in his driveway in somebody's car.
The rumor has it that she may be sleeping in the neighborhood in order to kind of remind Tim that there are people out there who are sleeping in vehicles, some of them, of course, illegal because of Tim's three nights in a driveway, then get out of town ordinance, which he passed last year
right. As
an amendment to the sleeping ban. It's legal now, thank you, Tim Fitzmaurice, to sleep in a vehicle for three nights out of the month. But the other 27 or 28 nights, you cannot sleep in a vehicle in that parking lot, even with the permission of the owner and the renter.
Right.
So
you basically what it forces people to do is find 10 driveways.
All right. Well, it's a way.
It's hard enough to find one driveway with some nice people that'll let you sleep in their driveway. To have to find 10 of them every month, so that you can rotate around and spend three nights in every driveway, is insane.
Now, come on. I mean, it's a way actually of expanding your contacts in the community.
Well, it's true, but still, I mean, I guess, you know, people could form coalitions and, like, each person find one person to get a driveway, and then 10 people connect, and then they all just circulate.
It's easy. I don't see why you activists are grumbling. I mean, just go out there and do the work necessary. As Mike Rotkin said, bring us a plan. Mike has said that repeatedly about those who've asked that he set up a campground or vote for a campground. He said, I don't have any problem with a campground. I just haven't seen a plan.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you brought him a campground in Capitola, he'd vote for it.
There you go. He's often suggested we all go to Capitola. I'm not sure why he likes Capitola so much.
Well, maybe he's planning on moving there after he gets out of office.
Maybe he's going to join the police force as a sort of an advisor. And the Capitola is famous for its police force. Hence, some call it Capitola. As
right.
You know. Well, listen,
Scott. He could become the spokesperson.
I think we could start. You could start panhandling for giving Michael a special boost to move to Capitola, but actually he is leaving office in 4 months or 5 months because he's leaving for 2 years before he comes back for term number 28 or whatever it is. Yes, he is actually the person who spent the longest amount of time on the city council that I've ever heard of in history here.
Right. And it would be my hope that he never spends another year on the thing after this term.
He deserves a good rest.
A very long rest.
Extremely long rest. I want to thank you, Scott. Is there more you want to tell us about anything upcoming so we can let other people
know? Well, on Tuesday, the big thing on the city council agenda is going to be this Broadway Bromer bike path through the middle of Verona Gulch.
This is the path which you feel homeless people should be concerned about because it's the widening allows the police to run their vehicles in there and start waking people up at night?
Right. Well, I mean, the right now there's just a dirt trail through Verona Gulch, and there's no way you can drive a car through there or a pickup truck or anything. So the police and also the rangers are unable, the park rangers are unable to actually patrol Verona Gulch at the moment. And if they build this path, according to the specifications in the draft environmental documents, it's going to be big enough to accommodate emergency vehicles. And the police will just come in there with their million candle power spotlight that they have equipped on a few cars and just start shining it up the two gulches there, trying to harass the people that currently camp there.
But it'll all be for their own good, of course.
You know, and then there's other issues. You know, there's people involved in Wicca and other such activities that go out into Verona Gulch and full moons and do ceremonies. Now the police will be able to harass them also.
Obscene cult practices. Certainly we don't want that happening.
Right. Yeah, that would be terrible.
It's shocking. All these naked women. I personally find the whole thing very repugnant. By the way, do you know when the next such ceremony will be taking place?
You can always go out there on a full moon and see if you can find people out there.
Cool.
And if there isn't a full moon gathering happen, you can always advertise one on your station and so the next full moon, a bunch of people will show up out there.
Well, I'm thinking of our next sleeping band protest will be a nude protest at City Council. By the way, that will be Tuesday, so for those of you who want, the weather is getting warmer, consider the possibility of coming in bathing suits and bringing bathing towels and togs to City Council as a way of kind of a trendy, fashionable, upscale protest. We've been having too much blankets and poverty. I mean, that's a negative influence, a negative imputation. It's a bad spin. I think we've got to do the upbeat thing, you know. Let's involve the homeless in the surfing scene. Maybe bring your surfboard to City Council on Tuesday.
All right, Robert. Well, I got to get going here.
Thanks for coming, Scott, and give us a call back on Sunday when, you know, we'll have more time and you can give us perhaps a more detailed analysis of other agenda items coming up.
All right. Take care, Robert.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that was community member Scott Graham and me going on as we usually do here on Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That is what you have been listening to. My apologies for not having given you that information for at least an hour, but that's who we are and where we are. This is a 6 to 8 show every Thursday. We also are broadcast Sunday from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon, and we cover civil rights for the homeless and issues of housing, issues of police misconduct, issues of what it means to be poor on the streets and how to get together so that we can deal with abuse that happens against poor people and find ways to restore and reclaim civil rights. Phone number to call in if any of this has amused you or perhaps annoyed you or perhaps you want to talk about something else is 427-3772. Try to stay generally on the topic of civil rights for poor people, but if you got something to say, we're open to hearing it. Maybe we can give you our particular slant. That is me, myself, and I here. I'm in the studio alone at the moment. If you want to catch me off air, or if you're interested in joining the protest at City Hall, which will be resuming tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning with some nice, hot, tasty soup from India Joe Schultz, particularly if my producer is able to get in touch with Joe and remind him that that's what he has to do tomorrow and heat up that soup, we're going to be waiting for the mayor to put the sleeping ban on the agenda. Now, it's true the agenda was made up, but the mayor can always try to come forward with an emergency item on the agenda, or he could maybe come forward with a public statement that he is committing himself to putting that on the soonest agenda, the agenda that comes up most immediately after this Tuesday session. It actually kind of is a telling thing that there's nothing on the agenda. And it tells us, to me, that there's not much serious action happening around sugar in the sleeping ban, but that doesn't mean we can't proceed. There is, as I said, been a lot of talk around 10th City at City Hall, and that's a possibility coming down the pike. There's a CPRB hearing, Citizens Police Review Board hearing, that's coming up on Monday, which I will give you a brief synopsis of the agenda probably on Sunday when I talk to you. I make it a point not to pay a lot of attention to CPRB hearings, except as they influence real critiques of the police department, which is what we should really be focusing on. How is the police department doing? What is it doing? And what is it not doing that it should be doing? That's what we need to be looking at and looking into. Well, let's see here. We have a few more interviews here. Let's see what we got here.
Thank you.
Here's a man who has been looking for an opportunity to sell your crafts.
My jewelry.
Your jewelry.
Yeah.
I first ran into you in front of City Hall where you were. Can you tell us the odyssey of your journey?
Well, I went through five government offices over the course of 3 hours. Parks and Recreation now handles peddler's licenses. The city has nothing to do with it. They do not have a peddler's license form, even though they say they do. And the only people who can sell by the alleged peddler's license is produce. And not fruit. No fruit, just produce.
Yeah. So eatable rings might do it.
No, yeah, if I coated these with some kind of a chia.
Rings grew on trees.
A chia ring, yeah, I could do that. The absurdity of the system goes on. That's it. End of story. I'm forced to leave town. That's it.
How long have you been in town?
About 2 months. I've tried for 2 months to make a living, and I'm living at the homeless shelter. That's it. End of story. I'm going to Napa. I'm going with Johnson Brothers, going back to the carnival Tuesday.
What kind of work will you be doing there?
I'll be doing running a joint.
Which is a
concession, doing, games of chance. So
you've been forced to turn to purveying gambling,
yes,
because of the failure of this town to allow you to vend your rings, right?
Well, yeah, and there's no place in this county, never mind the town. The only place is the flea market. That's it, period, end of story. And I'm known as the Juju Man. If you ever see PK on a piece of jewelry, I hope you got it from me, not a hawk shop.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, again, we're talking to
Patrick Kenny, Juju Man.
And Patrick, you say that over at the Homeless Issues, the Homeless Services Center, there's been a new policy on tickets?
No. I said there's a sign on one of the walls that says if you do get a ticket for sleeping in your vehicle, please bring it to the office. And the indication is that you don't actually have to move your vehicle. Just turn in the ticket and go on with your life.
Wow.
That is the indication now. Now I know there's more to it. We'll see there's more to it. And possibly I'm not giving it the correct twist here.
Right.
But that is what the sign said. So there you are.
Take it.
Okay. To be continued.
Thank you.
And on the line with us, after that bit of interviewing, we have Becky Johnson, who again apparently made a trip down to the old Sycamore, what is it called?
Well, it's the Sycamore Commons at 125 Sycamore Street. And it's a kind of a community building where we thought the advisory committee for the Dolphin Lee Project was going to be meeting. And I was there at 6, and there was no meeting, and there was no notice on the door that said that the meeting had been canceled or moved.
Did you talk to any hangers-on to find out what was going on there?
I did speak to a few people there. The only English-speaking person that I spoke to had no knowledge of any meeting or anything like that. It was not helpful other than assuring me that that was the only meeting room on the property. But, you know, I'm finding that we were kind of concerned that these members of the advisory committee who are supposed to be giving direction to the makers of the Dolphin Lee Project, that they don't seem to be very knowledgeable themselves about this project. And so I thought that to help them along and, you know, to quickly educate them, that I would tell them what they probably didn't know. And so I did a little flyer. It's called Did You Know That?
Can you give us some of the highlights? We have about 10 minutes, so whatever you can tell us, what don't we know?
Okay, well, I'll just start, and you can stop me at any point if it gets too tedious. Did you know that all 16 households of the Lee Apartments have signed a paper opposed to the Dolphin Lee Project? To refuse to move and ask that Mercy Charities Housing be fired? And the source of that was a formal notice to the city of Santa Cruz by the Lee tenants on May 2nd.
Let me just ask you to read the Did You Knows, but drop the sources. And if anybody is interested in actually getting a copy of this document, I believe if they give you a call, you're at 423-HUFF?
That's correct.
423-4833, which is also the number, by the way, to call if you have anything you want to address off-air, either when we're not on the air or when we're on the air and you don't want to talk on the air.
We could probably easily get to you if you can give us either an email or a fax number. We could probably fairly easily get that to you.
Of course, and also tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at 124 Lee Brandt Street, the Lee tenants are meeting, and I'll be there with that flyer as well. Go ahead with the flyer, Becky.
Okay. Did you know that felony drug convictions, unlawful detainers, unmitigated by medical problems and credit checks are a standard bar to Mercy Charities Housing entry? Did you know that given these entrance requirements, Lee tenants report that only 2 out of 16 households will qualify for the newly reconstructed apartments? Did you know that all Lee tenants and some Dolphin Lee tenants have proposed that the city build housing instead on 131 through 133 Lee Brandt, also known as the Pink Palace, into which tenants can relocate while the city refurbishes the Lee and the Dolphin apartments instead of tearing them down? Did you know that 63 units of usable and currently affordable housing will be destroyed to make way for only 48 units? Did you know that none of the existing units are red tagged or even yellow tagged? In the past 5 years, none of the units was determined by code enforcement officers as uninhabitable. Did you know that no one investigated the cost-benefit analysis of using redevelopment funds to upgrade the existing apartments rather than destroy them? And on this one, actually, I would like to kind of give some of the source information. Mayor Keith Sugar has claimed otherwise. In a Voices from the Village interview, he stated a study had been done and that it had been shown that it was not feasible. However, phone calls placed to Mayor Sugar requesting that study were not returned. Cecil Cirillo, who's the executive director of the Redevelopment Agency, in a letter to Huff dated April 24th, stated she knew of no study. So we don't know why they have not seriously considered upgrading these apartments rather than destroying them. It seems way more cost-effective to do that.
Let me jump in here.
Sure.
And thank you for what you've read of this flyer, and invite people to come tomorrow, 7 o'clock, to the Dolphin Leaf. You want to support these tenants. That's at 124 Lee Brand in the Beach Flats. And if you want more information, give a call to 423-HUFF. And Becky, thank you for both writing this flyer and calling in to read it and give us your report on your futile attempt to find those missing advisory committee Mercy Charities housing scoundrels. Where have they gone?
Why wouldn't that meeting be public? I mean, no one has given us any.
Well, they don't want the wrong sort of people
rationale.
There.
Rationale. I mean, other than I might be there.
I want to thank you. And is there anything more you want to say before I start the roundup here?
Stop the Dolphin Lee project.
Thank you.
And, of course, the way to get the Dolphin Lee Project stopped is to call 420-5017 and say to the City Council, stop the Dolphin Lee Project. Let's have some real affordable housing.
Your Radio Santa Cruz, you're on the air.
How's it going? It's Merlin.
Hey, Merlin.
Hey, Robert.
Yes, sir.
Can I talk about a benefit concert?
Briefly.
Okay, it's June 3rd at the Santa Cruz Civic.
Actually, David did mention this. Tonight? He did. He mentioned the bands.
Okay, I didn't know.
No problem. Anything else you want to bring up?
No, I was just going to talk about this. I didn't know that David said I'd called in earlier.
He had. He called about an hour ago. He gave us some of the benefits, but keep calling in and letting us know and reminding us, because we're going to want to fill up that Civic Auditorium.
Well, I'm going to give Stephanie some tickets, and I told her I'm going to give her tickets for her, you, and Skidmark Bob.
Oh, that's great.
Give away in the radio.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Merlin, for calling in, and I expect to have you have your own radio station soon, man.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, man. We need more free radio stations here in Santa Cruz, I tell you.
Well, one more would be nice.
At least.
I know a lot of people that would be willing to listen to my show, not to mention DJs have been begging me to get a radio station.
Well, tell them to up front a little money there. It only costs, a couple of $100 for a small translator and $1,000 maybe more for a bigger one. But it's not that big a deal for people who are, doing those kind of concerts, I would imagine. Anyway, I'm going to go.
The benefit's not for me.
I know. It's not a benefit for you. It's a benefit for people who want to communicate on the air and want more opportunities to do so.
No, I mean, it's benefits for the people against the sleeping
band. Oh, right. You're talking about the benefit concert.
Yeah, the benefit's not for me.
No, I understand that, of course. The benefit, the concert is for folks fighting the sleeping band and the initiative and the petition.
Yeah.
I want to thank you and call again.
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
All righty.
Bye.
Well, we got a wind out there that blows no good, and maybe it's blown away the next talk show host, ever irascible Uncle Dennis, who's usually here with all his equipment by this time, elbowing me out of the way. So I'll take this opportunity to mention that Food Not Bombs in San Jose is under attack. I unfortunately do not have the email that came to me about 4 or 5 days ago. I should have it with me. I don't. It was an email. There was one email from Scott Wagers of the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry in San Jose, which has recently been holding its own protests at the San Jose City Hall and having its own meeting with their mayor, Mayor Gonzalez. I'm not sure how successful those meetings have been, but they are getting some media about the disgraceful way homeless people are treated in San Jose. Again, sleeping bans, abusive police behavior. It sounds kind of like a cliche, like an old rap, but it's very real, very horrible, and very specific if you're out there suffering it. Well, here he is. Uncle Dennis has arrived. and he's got his cudgel with him. Keep that in your pocket there, Dennis. I know that you're eager to hit the board, but we must peaceful, nonviolent behavior is the watchword of Free Radio Santa Cruz. So it is true that what's been happening with the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry is they have been holding meals in St. James Park in order to dramatize and take back the right of homeless people to be in public spaces as the gentrification masters continue driving them out of the town. And we're going to be supporting them in that. I'm hoping to get them to come down to the next city council meeting, which will be on Tuesday, and we're not sure if that's going to happen or not. Council meeting will certainly happen. They can't hide that meeting, as Mercy Charities apparently likes to hide its own advisory committee meetings, as they did tonight. And I'm going to tell you more about that council meeting on Sunday when I come back. That'll be at 11 o'clock in the morning on 96.3 FM. That's a 2.5-hour show, so I have more time to babble at you, and you have more time to babble at me. And looks like Dennis is going to be doing some operation in the dark here. The light just went out. If there's an electrician out there with a spare light bulb, let him run to the studio right now at its trusty secret location. This has been Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, your Civil Rights for the Poor show, making its usual fumbly departure. And I'm going to be giving you a little Peggy Seeger as I go out, give Dennis a little opportunity to cue up his tapes, Earth First, which is nationally syndicated. And I encourage you to get a pencil and paper ready, because Dennis usually rattles out information a mile a minute. You need to really be there and be square and be ready to get the kinds of alerts and take the kinds of actions that's necessary to really make his program effective. It's effective if you act, not just if he speaks, because we need you just as hopefully you need us. So be with me again on Free Radio Santa Cruz on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning, when we'll be returning with Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Tomorrow at City Hall, it's Hot Soup at 8. We'll be there all day from 8 to 12, and then from 1 to 5, waiting for Mayor Sugar to come out publicly in favor of the sleeping ban repeal and put that on the agenda in a fashion that Catherine Byers cannot confute. She can vote against it, she can embarrass herself, but she has to deal with it. That's what we want Sugar to do. Thanks for being with us.
Come all you argumentative sods who like to chew the rag, who'll stand in a bar for hours on end and a beardy talking jack. Sit down and park your feet a while, give your mouths a rest, and I'll tell you about a dame they call the Guardian of the West. Her hair was the best that money could buy, her eyes were china blue. I swear they wouldn't have looked out of place on a frozen cockatoo. She'd a nose like the blade of a metal saw, a voice like a tungsten drill. She used it to bore the natives when she had a couple of hours to kill. When she was a puking baby numb, she read in a magazine about the royals and decided then she'd like to be the queen. But the job had already been taken, so she stamped her foot and said, if I can't be the Queen or the Prince of Wales, I'll be the PM instead.